Hello, everyone, and welcome to Myth Matters, a bi-weekly podcast of storytelling and conversation about mythology and why it's important to our lives today. I'm your host and personal mythologist, Catherine Svela. Wherever you may be in this wide, beautiful, crazy world of ours, you are part of this story circle. A belated Happy New Year's, my friend. Welcome to a new decade and the second season of Myth Matters, previously known as Myth in the Mojave. 2020 is off to a busy start for me, but I did find some time in my little break to sit by the fire and pet my cats and to reflect on what we might discover together in the coming year. I want to give a shout out to longtime listener and patron Rags Rosenberg, who sent me the story that I'm going to share with you today with the request that I consider it for a podcast. A custom-made podcast is one of the benefits that I offer to patrons who make a monthly pledge of $5 or more to Myth Matters. So if this sounds good to you, head over to Myth Matters on Patreon and sign up. The story that we're going to work with today is a Russian fairy tale called The Firebird and Princess Vasilisa, which was collected by Alexander Afanasyev. You can find variations of this story online, but I do prefer Afanasyev's version because his telling is spare and unencumbered with distracting details that have been added by the teller. When you find a story that attracts you, I suggest that you look around for more than one version of it so you can sift the nuances, because as storytellers, we add our little embroideries, although I try hard not to do that. Now, on that note, let's just turn to the story. I invite you to relax and listen and pay attention to the moment in the story that attracts you. This points towards the significance the story may hold for you right now. And after I tell it, I will share some of my thoughts about this fairy tale. The Firebird and the Princess Vasilisa. Once upon a time, in a certain kingdom, there was a strong and powerful king who had ruled for many years. Among his servants was a brave huntsman who had a valiant horse. One spring day, the brave huntsman went out for a ride through the forest on his valiant horse. The trees were putting out new leaves, flowers bloomed, the forest creatures were busy. The huntsman saw a large golden feather lying in the path. It glittered like a flame in the sunlight. His valiant horse said, "Leave the golden feather where it lies. If you take it, you will know trouble." But the brave huntsman looked at the golden feather and thought, if I bring this feather to the king, he will be pleased and probably give me a reward. This reasoning made more and more sense to him, and he did not listen to the words of his horse. He picked up the golden feather and galloped back through the forest to the palace of the king. He went before the king and said, "My king, I have brought you a golden feather of the firebird." The king looked at the feather and then at the brave huntsman. "Thank you. The feather is very fine indeed," he said, "as far as feathers go. Since you are able to bring me a feather of the firebird, you will be able to bring me the bird itself. Bring me the bird, or I swear by my sword, your head will be removed from your shoulders." The huntsman wept bitter tears and went to his valiant horse. The horse was waiting for him. "Master," said the horse, "why do you weep? The king has told me to bring him the firebird, and no man on earth can do that," said the brave huntsman. "I told you," said the horse, "that if you took the feather, you would know trouble. Well, do not be frightened yet. and do not weep. The trouble is not now. The trouble lies before you. Go to the king and ask him to have 100 sacks of corn scattered over the open field, and let this be done at midnight. So the brave huntsman went back into the palace and asked the king for this, and the king ordered that at midnight 100 sacks of corn should be scattered in the open field. Very early the next morning, the brave huntsman rode out to that field. The ground was scattered all over with corn. In the middle of the field stood a great oak tree. The brave huntsman let his horse loose to wander as he pleased. Then he climbed up into the oak and hid himself among the green limbs. The sun rose, and suddenly there was a noise in the forest that surrounded the field. The trees shook and swayed, a fierce wind blew, the waves of the ocean rose in sprays of foam, and the firebird came flying in on huge wings, flaming golden in the sun. It dropped down into the field and started to eat the corn. The horse wandered in the field, this way and that, quietly nibbling at small tufts of grass. Slowly, he came closer and closer to the firebird. Suddenly, he stepped on one of the firebird's spread wings and pressed it to the ground. The bird struggled and flapped mightily, but it could not get away. The brave huntsman slipped down from the tree, bound the firebird with 3 strong ropes, saddled the horse, and rode to the palace of the king. The brave huntsman took the firebird to the king, who was very pleased. He said, "Since you were able to bring me the firebird, you will be able to bring me my bride. The Princess Vasilisa lives in the land of Never, on the very edge of the world where the red sun rises from behind the sea, and she is the one for me. Bring her to me, and I will reward you with silver and gold. But if you do not bring her, then by my sword, your head will be removed from your shoulders." The huntsman wept bitter tears and went to his valiant horse. The horse was waiting for him. "Master," said the horse, "why do you weep?" "The king has ordered me to go to the land of Never and to bring back the Princess Vasilisa." "Do not weep, do not grieve," said the horse. "The trouble is not yet, the trouble is to come. Go to the king and ask him for a silver tent with a golden roof and for all kinds of food and drink to take with us on the journey." The brave huntsman went in and asked the king for this, and the king gave him a silver tent with silver hangings and a gold embroidered roof, tasty foods, and rich wine. Then the brave huntsman and his horse set off for the land of Never. On and on he rode, who can say how long? And at last they arrived at the edge of the world, on the shore where the red sun rises from behind the deep blue sea. The brave huntsman looked out over the blue water, and he saw the Princess Vasilisa in a little silver boat rowing with golden oars. He let the horse loose to wander where he pleased. Then he set up the shining tent with its silver hangings and its gold-embroidered roof, and set out the tasty dishes and wine that the king had given him. Then he sat down to wait for the Princess Vasilisa. The Princess Vasilisa dipped her golden oars in the blue water. She saw the tent standing silver and gold in the sun, and rowed a bit nearer to see it better. It was a beautiful sight. She rowed to the shore, grounded her boat, came up to the tent, and looked in. The brave huntsman rose and bowed before her. "Good day to you, princess," he said. "Be so kind as to come in and share a meal with me and taste my foreign wines." The princess sat down with the brave huntsman and ate some of the marvelous food and drank a goblet of the king's wine, and they enjoyed themselves. The wine was strong and made her drunk. Soon the princess was fast asleep. Quickly, the brave huntsman called to his valiant horse. He came running, and the brave huntsman folded up the golden tent and mounted his horse with the princess in his arms. They made their way swiftly back to the palace, and she slept the whole way. When they came to the king's palace, the brave huntsman carried the princess inside, and the king was very, very pleased. "Go sound the trumpets for our wedding," he said to his servants. "Let all the bells be rung." The bells rang out, and the trumpets sounded, and the noise of the horns and the ringing of the bells woke up Princess Vasilisa. She looked around. "Why are the bells ringing?" she asked. "And what's with the trumpets? And where is the blue sea and my silver boat?" The Princess Vasilisa wasn't happy. "The bells and trumpets announce our wedding," said the king. "The blue sea is far away, and, well, instead of a silver boat, you will have a golden throne." But the Princess Vasilisa was not satisfied. "Let the one who brought me here go back to the blue sea," she said. "In the middle of that sea lies a great stone, and under that stone is hidden my wedding dress. Without that gown, I will not wed." "You heard the princess," the king said to the huntsman. "Ride back to the blue sea, find the great stone that lies in the middle, and bring back the wedding dress that lies hidden beneath it. Bring back that dress, or by my sword, your head will be removed from your shoulders." The huntsman wept bitter tears and went to his valiant horse. "There is no way of escaping death this time," he thought to himself. The horse was waiting for him. "Master," said the horse, "why do you weep?" "The king has ordered me to get the Princess Vasilisa's wedding dress from the bottom of the sea." "What did I tell you?" said the valiant horse. "I told you that there would be trouble if you picked up the golden feather of the Firebird. Well, do not be afraid. The trouble is not yet. The trouble is yet to come. Let's go get the wedding dress of the Princess Vasilisa." The brave huntsman rode for who knows how long, until they reached the edge of the world, where the red sun rises from behind the deep blue sea. The brave huntsman looked out over the water, but the valiant horse looked up and down the shore. It saw a huge crab moving slowly, sideways, along the sand. When the crab came close, the valiant horse stepped on the crab's neck. "Ow, ow, you will be the death of me," cried the crab. "Let me live, and I will do whatever you ask of me." "Very well," said the valiant horse. "This is what you will do for us. In the middle of the blue sea lies a great stone, and under that stone is hidden the wedding dress of the Princess Vasilisa. Bring us the dress." The crab called out in a loud voice, and the water roiled and foamed, and thousands of crabs, large and small, came from all directions. The huge crab told them what was needed and sent them back into the sea. After a little time, the water roiled and foamed again, and the multitude of crabs came to the shore with the wedding dress of the Princess Vasilisa. The brave huntsman took it and galloped back to the palace on his valiant horse. He went into the palace and gave the wedding dress to the Princess Vasilisa. The king held out his hand to the princess, but she did not take it. "No," she said, "I will not marry you until you order the brave huntsman to bathe in boiling water." the king ordered his servants to get a big cauldron of water and make a great fire. "When the water is at its hottest," he said, "take the brave huntsman and throw him in." Everything was ready. The water in the cauldron boiled, and the servants took hold of the brave huntsman. "Now this is trouble," thought the brave huntsman. "Why did I pick up the golden feather of the firebird? Why didn't I listen to my valiant horse?" He recalled his valiant horse. "Wait, my king," he said. "Let me say farewell to my horse before I die." "Very well," said the king. The huntsman wept bitter tears and went to his valiant horse. "Master," said the horse, "why do you weep?" "The king has commanded me to bathe in boiling water," he said. "Don't be afraid and don't weep," said the valiant horse. "You'll live." The huntsman went back into the palace. The servants grabbed him and threw him into the cauldron of boiling water. Twice he sank below the surface, and then he jumped out of the water and turned into a man so handsome that words can't describe him. Seeing this, the king decided to bathe in the boiling water too, and foolishly plunged into the water and died in an instant. They buried the king and made the brave huntsman king in his place. He married the princess Vasilisa and lived for many years with her in love and harmony. Now let's take a close look at this story. First, we have a huntsman. That is, one who goes hunting, is out looking. He's not at home sitting by the fire. And he has a horse, a partner who shares his essential quality, bravery. Together they find something extraordinary, a golden feather from the firebird. And from there, everything else unfolds. There's a long tradition of stories about what is commonly called in fairy tales an animal familiar. In other traditions, this animal may be called a totem animal. This describes an intimate relationship with an animal and its qualities that is both actual and metaphorical. And by that I mean that it is recognized and related to through the imagination. Given all the horse knows, we might say that it is a form of what James Hillman called the daemon, the huntsman's guide in his unfolding and spokesperson for his soul life. James Hillman noted that it's easier for many of us to believe that we are solitary and relatively powerless egos in the world than to accept our lived experience belonging to a community of seen and unseen other beings. Other beings in our interior life and the world beyond. And to see that we are guided by presences like the valiant horse. The reality of others, that is, non-humans with consciousness, intelligence, and the autonomous ability to influence and shape our lives, is denied by the limited theory of a mechanical, material universe, which is, unfortunately, the theory that has guided our conditioning for centuries. This distrust, then, of our own experience and of the imaginal, another word for soul, is a result of centuries of conditioning in Western culture, of schooling in the limited dogmas constructed by people whose fears and doubts and political, philosophical, or religious agendas about truth, quote-unquote, became part of the Western power game. And yet, alternative understandings survive. And we have a story about a valiant horse who speaks quite clearly to his huntsman, and to whom the man turns repeatedly in his despair. The huntsman weeps. He surrenders to his situation, and in this state of openness receives the higher intelligence of his guide. The valiant horse is an integral part of the huntsman and his life, and will refrain from turning the horse into a symbol and talking about what quote-unquote horse means. You know something about horses, about their beauty and speed, their willingness to partner with the rider, and the depth of their understanding, effort, and heart. You have a feeling about this horse and an image, and that's enough. Now, the horse doesn't ask the huntsman what he wants to do with the firebird feather. He says, "Don't pick it up unless you want to know trouble." And in this way, he surfaces the desire of the huntsman. Trouble is another word for adventure, for the extraordinary adventure of life. Once spoken, the huntsman can't refuse it. He is out looking around, after all. Now, he explains his desire to pick up the feather in a logical enough way. Don't we all? But there is no way, king's reward aside, that he can leave a golden firebird feather on the path. And the valiant horse knows this, because he knows his rider better than the man knows himself. And so the story unfolds. The Princess Vasilisa, like the firebird, is a mysterious visitor from another realm, and she must be brought to the kingdom to marry the king. Who or what is she? The missing element, something valuable and necessary. Here, one might be tempted to leave the story and bring in concepts to speak of the quote-unquote masculine and the missing quote-unquote feminine, and so tell a different story about the nature of the king and the kingdom and the huntsman and what they, as men, must be lacking. But let's not do that. Gender concepts are fluid cultural constructs, and it's time to embrace this as many people strive to live this reality, and the definitions become less and less meaningful. In place of the term feminine, we might say that what has been repressed or denied sufficient value in the kingdom must be brought in and honored, and that the one-sided nature of the kingdom is expressed in this story through the absence of a queen. So the huntsman is brave, the king is strong. The presence of a princess and her marriage to the one who is her equal, her proper match, takes place, and they become the rulers of the kingdom. The union of male and female is a root metaphor, an archetypal image of new life, abundance, and harmony, and marriage lends the stability and the time to mature. Necessary elements come together in service to life, the life of the individual and of the kingdom. The huntsman survives the bath in boiling water and emerges transformed, while the king doesn't survive it. The existence of a kingdom and a king who is replaced in this story remind us of the collective import of our willingness, or lack thereof, to pick up the feather and allow ourselves to be guided by the imaginal, to heed the call of the soul life, and listen to the horse. If this notion of the soul life puzzles you, then I suggest that you begin by paying closer attention to everything, and allow for the possibility that it, whatever it is, a thought, a feeling, or event, is more than you know, and doesn't belong to you. allow yourself to be with it, perhaps informed by it, and resist the urge to explain it away. This is not a process of making it more personally meaningful to you either. It's not about you. It's a perspective that begins with curious attention to what is present. We live in what Hillman called the cult of the self, a mythology of the personal self, me and my life, mine. So it's easy to forget that your call, your feather, and your response to it has consequences for us all. I focused on the partnership between huntsman and horse as I reflect on the current collective transformation that's underway. Is it possible that our recognition and engagement with the life of the soul and what Hillman called the soul of the world is the key to successfully deconstructing the corrupt paradigm and living in a new kingdom? If so, this is a move that each of us can make that is not limited by our finances or scope of influence on social media. It is a move into a deeper and richer reality. It is a move to the fullness of our humanness. When we undergo a transformation, the world is also transformed. And I remind you that transformation is often the emergence of a new perspective. Actually, it's always the emergence of a new perspective, a new way of seeing, and so a new way of showing up in the world. This isn't easy. The king is strong. You may end up in very hot water now and again. You may feel that you are at the end. And yet, if you are like the huntsman in the story, your bravery and your valiant horse will be all that you need. That's it for me, Catherine Savela and Myth Matters. If you're new to Myth Matters, I invite you to head over to the Mythic Mojo website, where you'll find information about the podcast and a variety of ways to subscribe or listen from your favorite podcast platform. I also post transcripts of each episode on www.mythicmojo.com. If you visit the website, you will also find information about various ways that you can work with me one-on-one to use story to shift your consciousness, make life changes, and understand the mythic dimension of your life. Click on the Consult tab in the navigation bar for details about that. You are the story circle, dear listener, and it means everything to know that you are out there. I'm pretty good at entertaining and provoking myself, but I wouldn't go to such lengths without company. And although I'd like to foster the image that I'm astute and organized enough to simply sit down and turn on the mic for you for 30 or 45 minutes every 2 weeks, each podcast actually takes me many hours to create. So your listening and your support are essential. There are a number of ways that you can support the mission of Myth Matters and help me, your storytelling mythologist, as well. You can share this podcast with your friends, family, and colleagues. You can post positive reviews on Facebook and on your favorite podcast platform. You can email me with questions and comments. And if you're able, you can provide financial support through Patreon. Your monthly pledge of $5 or $10 a month is a fortune in my world, friends, and the affirmation it carries is worth more than gold. You'll find links to the Myth Matters site on Patreon on the Mythic Mojo website. And I want to offer special thanks this week to Constance Walsh for her ongoing financial support of Myth Matters. Thank you, Constance. And thank you so much for listening. Please tune in next time And until then, happy myth-making, and keep the mystery in your life alive.